Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshacharine. On Jambavan Prabhu's suggestion, I'll speak from the nectar of devotion. Srila Prabhupada wrote many books and desired to write many more books. And he desired that all the Vaishnava literatures be translated into English and that his disciples and followers write many books. But among all these books, he said that four are essential. Namely, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and this Nectar of Devotion, which is a summary study of Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. This book brings together, summarizes, and clarifies all the essential information of all the other three books. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are ancient classics. Both can be classified both as Shruti and Smriti. Actually Shruti, although often considered as Smriti. So they are seminal works. And Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is that book which brings out the essence of all the Shastras, even Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Bhavam, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literature. What is the actual message of Srimad Bhagavatam? The inner essence was revealed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is especially revealed in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the teachings and activities of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even more so than in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. If Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita had not been written, then Anarpita Chiring Chirat Karunya Vatirno Kalo Samapiyatamuna Tajvala Rasa Swabhakti Sriyam Hari Purita Sundara Dyuti Kadamba Sandipita Sada Hridya Kandari Spurutu Vasa Chinandana. This Rupa Goswami's blessing, which is included at the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that may Shakti Nandana be situated in the core of your heart. He has brought that which was not previously given in a very long time. I mean, since the last time that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself came, which is in the previous day of Lord Brahma, practically unknown. What is that? Unatajvala Rasa Swabhakti Shriyam. The beauty of devotional service to himself. He is Krishna in the role of a devotee of Krishna, and he has come to demonstrate unatajvala rasa, which Srila Prabhupada translates as the topmost resplendent mellow of pure devotional service unto himself. So this Radhar Mahima Prema Rasa Shima, the glories of Srimati Radharani, the love of Srimati Radharani, which is the ultimate limit. There's no limit, but it's beyond anything else in the realm of prem, pure love of God, which that prem which is hardly even dreamed of or heard of, even in other Vaishnav sampradayas, that achieves or is magnified to the full perfection by Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it's not very explicitly demonstrated even in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. But it is specifically described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Described in as far as it is possible to describe. And how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was relishing the premaras, the loving feelings of Radharani toward Krishna. So this rasa, what is rasa? Yes, chamatkara bhara bhu. That's that which is full of deep wonder. Hridi sattvojvale bhadham, which appears in a heart, which is, See, it's very difficult to say in English. Even difficult to understand in any language, but, Sattva ujvala, the heart resplendent existence. I don't know, how can you say? Overflowing, effulgent with love of God, that rasa, that ever fresh, ever wonderful experience in relationship with Krishna and his devotees. So that's bhakti rasa. That is experienced in four sthaibhas, or the role of a servant, the role of a friend, the role of a parent or superior, and the role of a lover in relationship with Krishna. And shantaras, or the neutral rasa, that is almost a not quite a relationship with Krishna, that rati, that feeling of attachment to Krishna, strong attachment to Krishna. So this is all analyzed in this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What is the nature of bhakti? What are the different feelings and relationships in relationship with Krishna? What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give is analyzed here. What is the value of that bhakti? How to attain that bhakti? Why it is desirable to attain it? How this bhakti is far superior to anything else, even the position of Lord Brahma, the position of Indra, the position of liberation, all that is described in this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It is a, like most Sanskrit works, it is quite a complex. It is describing the psychology of God and his devotees. So psychology isn't an easy subject, even when it's mundane psychology. What to speak of the psychology of the relationship between God and his devotees. So it's not a very easy subject. Srila Prabhupada has presented this as the nectar of devotion in a manner that, which is easier to understand. One point about the Sanskrit literature that describes bhakti, in the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavat is Puranic literature, although Srimad Bhagavat, it's like the Vedas, like the Puranas, like the Kavya or the poetry. These literatures, they instruct in different ways. The Vedas, they instruct by ordering, like a guru, like a father. Do this. The Puranas, they tell stories, it's like a friend, tells you some instructive story. And the Kavya is, it's poetry, it's very sweet, and that instructs like a lover. So that comparison is given. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is full with all of these. All these different kinds of, all these methods of giving instruction. But particularly Bhakti Shastra, it lends itself to poetry. Even in the mundane sense, we find that poets, it's a common subject of poets, love. The only problem is that mundane poetry is mundane, and everything mundane is useless, stupid, temporary, and a cause of ultimate distress. So that jara rasa, or dull rasa, or the rasa of foolish people, that love is a perverted reflection of the actual love that is meant for Krishna. But we even in the mundane field, we find that poets, that a major subject is love. So the spiritual love of Krishna and his devotees has given rise to a vast literature, much of it in poetry. Now the nature of poetry, the very nature of poetry is that subjects are often indirectly expressed. Many comparisons are made. It is more concerned with feelings, emotions, than with precise accuracy. It's not a scientific work trying to explain something or make someone understand something, but it appeals more to the emotions. And among lovers, their discussions, they are full of jokes, double-edged words that can mean more than one thing, so you can take it one way or the other way, so that you can apparently insult someone and but actually praise them, or you can speak in the presence of two people, and one person will understand it one way, and the other person will understand it another way. So it lends itself to a lot of wordplay, and this is delightful. Krishna, part of his lila, a common part of his lila, is that he will joke with his friends, with the gopis, and they will use words. They will use words in all kinds of different ways to mean all kinds of different things. And they'll have like contests in this way, in which they're sparring with each other in using words in different ways and trying to get the better of each other. So, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are many passages which can be translated in different ways. In fact, there are some whole works in Sanskrit which can be the whole work can be understood in a completely different context. There's one work, what is that? I believe that was one work of Kalidas he composed. It's a whole long drama, which it can be, if you understand it one way, it can be understood to be the pastimes of Lord Ram, and another way it can be understood to be the summary of the, or exposition of Mahabharata. So such expertise was there among the great Sanskrit poets. So but many of the terms of Shastra, they can be understood in various ways. Krishna Tula Bhagavat Vibhu Sabha Shrai Prati Shloke Prati Akare Nana Artha Koi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Srimad Bhagavatam is comparable or the same as Sri Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Krishna, it is all powerful and can give all shelter to others. And in every verse, what do you speak of every verse? In every syllable, there are various meanings to be understood. So to explain even one shloka from Shastra, that is not possible because the meanings are so multifarious, so deep and so subtle. So the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the original work by Rupa Goswami, often it's not very easy to understand, and Jiva Goswami and later Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, they gave commentaries to help make it easier to understand. But even then, it's not so easy to understand. Easier to understand means for people who are on that level of scholarship, but it's not a very easy thing. Unless one is trained. To enter into Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first one should be trained in Sanskrit, which is not, it's not like, do a 3-week course or something and get a certificate. It's not such a simple thing. And then one should have a background in philosophy, in Rasa Shastra. The Rasa Shastra is, the mundane Rasa Shastra is described by Bharat Muni. as that parallels that of the transcendental rasa that is often quoted by transcendental poets. So, and even within the subject of rasa, there are different authorities. I mean, this is Indian culture. People think Indian culture is wearing a sari and eating chapatis, but it's a lot more than that. There's how the level of knowledge and the level of absorption in spiritual subject matters. You know, there were so many different schools. We hear about the six darshans, but there were only six basic fields, even within the field of bhakti. There are various schools, and then the study of rasa. The study of rasa, that is intimately linked with the subject of dance, because the poetry that is the expression of ecstatic feelings. Poetry naturally lends itself to song. Song means music, and the ultimate expression is dance. Now, the ultimate activity of the Supreme Lord is dancing, either as Sri Krishna in his rasa dance or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his prema sankirtan. So the ultimate activity is the dancing. This rascal Nietzsche, the 19th century madman who was called a philosopher, he was actually a madman in the literal sense. So he was an atheist, but he said that I might believe in God if he danced. Because he only had knowledge of the Christian concept of God as some nasty old guy who sits on a cloud and throws everyone into hell. But actually God is dancing. Gaurang, what is that? Gauranga Nritta Nitta. That's one subtitle of the Jagadananda Pandit's Prema Vivarta. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing is eternal. So, this, in the Nritta Shastra, there is description of rasa. That drama, dance, all the lila, one understanding of the word lila is drama. And drama is specifically meant to illuminate rasa. The point of drama is to convey the feelings of rasa to the audience. So this is all called kala or arts. So this culture is a very high culture, which we can hardly begin to imagine. So Srila Prabhupada has summarized all these difficult topics in the Nectar of Devotion and made it available to us. The Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, begins with Rupa Goswami first of all defining the first, the subject matter is Bhakti Rasa. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The ocean of the nectar of Bhakti Rasa. And Bhakti Rasa, it's the mellows of devotion. Mellow is the word which is used. There's this, like I said, Prabhupada himself said it's very difficult to give any translation of Rasa. So in, first of all, in when any book is to be, any subject is to be treated in a book, the first thing to do is vastu nirdesh, to describe what are we talking about, what is our subject here, what's it all about. Vastu nirdesh ashirvad mangalacharan. This at the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's stated that the three functions at the beginning of a work are to define the subject that is to be described and analyzed, to offer blessings to the readings, and to pray for the blessings of the Supreme Lord and His devotees. So, the work actually, all the works, they'll begin with prayers to the Supreme Lord and His great devotees. And that's been covered in Srila Prabhupada's introduction in Nectar of Devotion. And then in chapter 1, that's translated characteristics of pure devotional service. So it's ascertainment of the subject. What is being discussed here? What is this bhakti? This word bhakti, everyone in India has heard the word bhakti, but hardly anyone knows what it means. Like most words, just like God, people say God, they don't know what it means. And they're so ignorant that they think that, well, it can mean whatever you want it to. But it has a specific meaning. All these words, Bhagawan, Bhakti, Rasa, they all have specific meanings. So what is Bhakti? What is anything we can describe, we can understand by its description? What is a cow? Please say.
A cow
is a cow, yeah, but that didn't tell me what it is. Is this a cow?
No.
Why is it not a cow?
White and it's not.
Well, a cow doesn't have to be white. It's not white, that's true. And you don't see cows this color, but cows
come.
You're living in Detroit. You don't see cows, and you only see in the city. Well, alright, let me say. Now, desi guy or not desi, that's not our subject here, but a cow is an animal with four legs that has horns unless they cut it off. And it says moo in English. And in Bengali, amba. And in other, what does it say in Hindi? Or Tamil? What is a cow?
Gaya.
Kya balte gaya? Go mata, lekin kya? Wo shabd kya balte Hindi mein? Amba. Ma. So it makes a noise, something like that. It's called something different in different languages. It gives milk. Still we didn't come to, I mean, this would still also fit the description of several other animals. I don't know I don't know how to biologically differentiate a cow from a buffalo. They look pretty much the same. And they have pretty much the same function. There's a difference there. If you drink cow's milk, it nourishes your brain tissues. And if you drink buffalo's milk, you become a buffalo. You become dull. But the buffalo makes a sound similar to a cow, isn't it? You don't know, because you're all city people. Whoa, or something like that. Why did I become a buffalo? What bad karma did I do? Anyway, we need a biologist here. But a cow, it's definitely different from a sheep or a goat. Even though they're all mammals, and they all give milk. So it can be described,
And they're all white.
White? No. Cows come in many colors.
White,
brown, black and white, brown and white, all kinds of different colors. So anyway, we can understand by its characteristics how a cow is different from a goat. So bhakti is to be understood by its characteristics. We can say, I have bhakti for my country, but it doesn't fit. Bhakti is translated as devotion, but bhakti, specifically, what is being described here is shuddha bhakti. Rupa Goswami describes that as Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama jagavitam anukuvena krishna shilanam bhaktir uttama. Pure devotional service, or the highest level of bhakti is that which is devoid of the propensity for karma, the path of karma, the Vedic path of karma, and the Vedic path of jnana, and which is a cultivation of devotional service to Krishna in a favorable manner, directed toward Krishna in a favorable manner. Now it may be said that some Some persons are very Krishna conscious. Kamsa was very Krishna conscious. He was always thinking of Krishna. Ravana was always thinking of Ram. But there, that is not bhakti, because it was not in a mood of devotion toward Krishna or Ram, just the opposite. So, what is that bhakti? What is the effect of bhakti? In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is meant for persons who are desirous to be devotees. So, why should we desire to perform bhakti? What is the benefit? If we say to someone, you should go to college and study, and we say, why? What is the benefit? You have to spend so much money, you have to spend so much time, so much of your life you have to dedicate. What is the benefit? So generally it's considered the benefit is you can get a degree and then you can go on working hard, but you'll earn money. That's education today. There's no consideration of character development or any such thing. It's simply a means to get money. So many people think it is worthwhile to get a college degree, to spend the time and the money and the effort to work hard to get a college degree with the hope that upon getting that, one will be eligible to go on working like an ass throughout his whole life and earn more money than less educated asses. So this is the reason why people go to college. What is the benefit? Now, Rupa Goswami states that there are six benefits from performing this devotional service. Klesha Agni Shubhadha Moksha Laghuta Krit Sudur Labha Sandrananda Vishesha Nashi Krishna Akasha Nechasa. The first is that pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Even at the beginning, even when one just enters into bhakti, one immediately feels relief from material distress. Now that doesn't mean that on a hot day you don't feel hot and on a cold day you don't feel cold. And it doesn't mean that if you chant Hare Krishna, all your debts go away. The bank who you owe $50,000 to, they send a representative and say, well, we decided to cancel your debt. It doesn't happen like that. And people often ask, well, why doesn't it happen? I'm chanting Hare Krishna, still I have so many problems. Yeah, okay, good. Because if people took up devotional service simply to get free from material problems, then it wouldn't be a transcendental endeavor. Then where would the love for Krishna be? Rather, the material problems may continue. It may even seem that they become worse. But a devotee understands this in perspective. He understands that actually I have no relationship to these problems and these difficulties. And understanding that now I am sheltered by Krishna, that I can cross over all these problems. As long as I'm in the material world, there must be problems. But if I'm sheltered at the lotus feet of Krishna, then no more problems. Then I go to Krishna. Then I become free from problems. As long as we're in this material world, there must be problems. But now I'm sheltered at the lotus feet of Krishna. So, one thing is that a devotee, he understands that whatever the problems may be, that is inevitable. But now I'm on the path of all auspiciousness. I am on the path to Krishna. In devotional service, one understands I'm simply the humble, the very insignificant servant of Krishna. One thinks like that. So, as long as one is thinking, I am the center of everything, I am very important, then even one's little problems will seem to be very important. Because I have a problem, and I'm so important, and why doesn't the whole world cooperate to solve my problems? What's wrong with them? But when one accepts the mode of devotional service to Krishna, he realizes that even very great problems, so what? It's only me. I'm very small and insignificant. What does it matter? He doesn't take himself very seriously, but he takes his service to Krishna very seriously. And this absorption in a mood of service to Krishna makes even very big problems seem very insignificant. Therefore, devotional service immediately brings relief from all kinds of material distress. Kleshagni Shubhada. Immediately one takes to devotional service, everything becomes auspicious. Often we like to perform different sacrifices to invoke auspiciousness, or we do some special fast or something like this. But actually there's no need. We can do. There's no harm. There's no harm to perform Vaishnav Yagyas. We can do. But we should know that even if we don't perform all these kind of different Yagyas, simply by performing devotional service, everything becomes auspicious. Because actually in the material situation, everything is inauspicious. As long as one is not engaged in pure devotional service to Krishna, everything is inauspicious. Even if it seems, I have a nice wife, I have a nice car, I have a nice house, it's all inauspicious because one is in the atmosphere of ignorance. But if one is engaged in pure devotional service to Krishna, even if his material situation is not very good, but his situation is actually all auspicious because he's properly situated, he's sheltered by Krishna. He's on the path of freedom from birth and death. He's on the path of all bliss. So even in the beginning, even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, all auspiciousness is there. Everything is good. Everything becomes nice. Vishvam purna sukhayate. We've heard many times, this world is miserable. It's important to know, this world is miserable because it's full of birth and death. But from another perspective, one who is situated in pure devotional service, for him the whole world is full of bliss because he sees Krishna everywhere. Everything is blissful, everything is wonderful. What is the problem if we are at the lotus feet of Krishna? The only problem is that everyone else is suffering from lack of knowledge of Krishna. So let us try to communicate that to them. Then, as will be described later in Nectar Devotion, there is sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice, bhava bhakti, devotional service in ecstasy, and prema bhakti, devotional service in pure love of God. So, even in sadhana bhakti, even in the beginning, one is free from all material distress and is placed in all auspiciousness. And in bhava bhakti, when one comes to the level of ecstasy in serving Krishna, then moksha laghuta krit, that the idea of becoming liberated from the material world seems very insignificant. Material distresses seem to be not very significant. The idea of having moksha, which is very dear to transcendentalists, even many Vaishnavas, most of the Vaishnav sampradayas, if we ask people, then why are you performing bhakti? They'll say to get moksha. Now their idea of moksha may be that the four kinds of Vaishnav liberation, which are described as Sarshti, Sanidhya, Sarupam, and what's the Sarshtis have the same opulence. Salok is to live on the same planet as the Lord. Sarupam to have a form like the Lord, and Sanidhya means to be in the proximity of the Lord, to be close to Him. But those who are experiencing the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, they experience that ecstasy right now. They're already liberated. You don't have to be liberated from this body. They're already experiencing that. So the idea of moksha is meaningless to them. They are jivan mukta sa uchyate. They're already liberated. By ihayasya para, Yasya Hare Dasya Karmana Manasagira Nikala Svapyavastasu Jivan Mukta Su Uchate. One who Iha, even here in this world, who is absorbed in Hari Dasya, service to the Supreme Lord Hari, by his mind, body and words, is in all respects liberated. We should not think that this person is a conditioned soul. It is offensive to think of a pure Vaishnava as a conditioned soul. He's already liberated. But that pure, that ecstasy, bhava bhakti, that is sudurlabha, not such an easy thing. We often talk, that was ecstatic, ecstasy. But ecstasy is not such an easy thing to attain. There's some drug, is there not, called ecstasy? It's concentrated cocaine, something like this? I don't know, I've heard of it. So they call it ecstasy, it probably gives some euphoric feeling. But that is not actual ecstasy. Actual ecstasy means that which is experienced in love of Krishna. So that is not very easily attained. By the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is relatively easily attained. But it's not just a matter of putting on tilak and mumbling a few Hare Krishnas. But it requires that one will actually come to the platform, giving up all material desires and becoming fully dedicated in the service of Krishna, praying for the mercy of Krishna and the acharyas and getting that. So, sandrananda, that is the sandrananda visheshatna, when one is in pure devotional service, the full love of Krishna, then one becomes completely ecstatic, completely full of bliss. One's whole being becomes filled with that, the bliss of love of Krishna. And that bhakti is so, that bhakti, the devotion of the devotees is so wonderful that Krishna himself, whose very name means that he attracts everyone, he himself becomes attracted by the bhakti of the bhaktas. This is the extraordinary characteristic of pure devotional service, that the Supreme Lord himself, who is Atmarama, he's fully satisfied in himself. But when he sees the pure devotion of his devotees, he becomes amazed. Oh, this is something wonderful. He himself becomes so pleased with that, that he himself becomes desirous. What is this prema bhakti? It is such a wonderful thing that he himself takes the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to experience. What is the bliss that the devotees, specifically Srimati Radharani, what is the bliss that she is experiencing? He wants to, Krishna feels that I'm all full of bliss. I am Ananda Swarup, Ananda Murti, the very form of bliss. But I'm getting cheated here, because Radharani is getting more bliss than me. She's feeling more happiness from loving me than I am experiencing by being me. So I shouldn't get cheated. So he takes the form of Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to experience what is the bliss of loving Krishna. Krishna himself becomes attracted by pure devotional service to himself. So this is the advertisement. Come to this bhakti. Various advertisements are exhorting us to act in various ways. Buy this. Buy some product. Go to Florida for your vacation. Join this school. Get well educated. Take this course. So advertisements, they are exhorting us to act in various ways. For those who are are very fortunate, they will appreciate this advertisement. Rupa Goswami says, look here, if you take to bhakti, you'll be free from all material distress. You'll be situated in all auspiciousness. You will be Ishani Shubhada, in such an exalted position that even liberation will seem insignificant to you. You will be situated in the highest complete bliss, so much so that Lord Krishna himself will be attracted to your devotional service. So this is the offer that is given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And it goes on to describe how pure devotional service is distinguished from imitation devotional service, how it is surpasses the platform of even pious worldly work or the endeavor to attain liberation from this material world, how it is to be performed in the beginning stages, in the stage of sadhana, what are the characteristics of sadhana bhakti, that performed according to rules and regulations, and raga bhakti, that which is performed according to spontaneous attraction. And specifically, what are the different rasas, analysis of rasa, that I was saying, that's the psychology of God and His devotees. What are the experience, how they experience love of God? So all this is described in this most wonderful book, which Srila Prabhupada has very kindly given us. And we should read it from time to time to understand what is bhakti and to be enlivened in devotional service, to be enlivened by hearing about the little anecdotes which describe the different kinds of attractions in devotional service that the pure devotees have. How, for instance, Daruka, the charioteer of Krishna, is fanning Krishna. And then all of a sudden he realizes, I'm fanning Krishna, the Supreme Lord, and he becomes stunned in ecstasy. And then he curses his stunning, because this stunning, this ecstasy is useless. I don't want this ecstasy, because now I can't fan him. I'm stunned and I can't fan. I'm meant to be doing service, not enjoying doing the service. That's very instructive, isn't it? There's a similar anecdote in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he, as usual, he went with all his devotees for the Mangalarti of Jagannath early in the morning. Then after seeing Mangalarti, he came out of the temple with all his devotees, started kirtan. And it was such a kirtan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was completely absorbed in bliss, and the kirtan went on for a long time, very long time, right up to midday. That's quite a long time, isn't it? In the heat of Puri Dham. So all the devotees were feeling exhausted, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going on in ecstasy. And Nityananda Prabhu was seeing everyone was exhausted, and it was time for lunch, no one had eaten anything, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to do his noontime duties of bathing. But at the same time, he didn't just want to suddenly stop the kirtan and jerk Chaitanya Mahaprabhu out of his ecstasy. So one by one, he stopped, you stop singing. The next one, you stop singing. So gradually the volume of the kirtan went down. In the meantime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is still chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And no one else is chanting, what's going on? And he looks around and see everyone, no one else is chanting. And then he comes to external consciousness, and Nityananda Prabhu says, you know, actually it's midday and it's time for you to go take your bath and okay. So then he took his bath, he came and took prasadam, and often he would take prasad at the house of one of his devotees, and then he would, or the residence, the lodging of one of his devotees, and then he would come back to his room at the house of Kashi Mishra, the Gambhira. And the system was that his servant, Govinda, would come and gently massage Mahaprabhu's legs until Mahaprabhu fell asleep. Then Govinda would come back and take prasad, clean everything up, and then he'd be ready to serve Mahaprabhu again when he woke up. He'd take a short nap. But this time Mahaprabhu, he just came back to his room and fell in the doorway. Just came inside, and without going inside any further, he fell right in the doorway. Just so exhausted. Of course, he's the Supreme Lord, but he's in his Leela, he exhibits the characteristics to some extent that appear to be like human beings. So, Govinda asked him, that he said, could you just move aside a little bit so I can come inside and massage you? And he said, no, I'm too tired. I can't move even slightly. So then Govinda said, well, how can I massage you? He said, well, it's up to you. Do whatever you like, but I can't move. So Govinda thought what to do. Then he took his upper cloth from his body, spread it over Mahaprabhu's body, offered obeisances, and walked over. Now you shouldn't step over the body of, shouldn't step over anything, actually. What to speak of the worshipable Supreme Lord and one's guru, even though Govinda was actually the godbrother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But on the order of Ishwarapuri, their mutual guru, he came to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a servant, so he treated him as guru. So he offered obeisances to be free, you know, he's making an offense, but what to do? Yes, so then he took the wrapper off and gently massaged, and Mahaprabhu took rest. And Mahaprabhu, after some time, woke up and he saw Govinda is still there. He said, well, why didn't you go to take prasad? And Govinda said, well, I couldn't go out. He was lying in the doorway. He said, well, how did you get in? And Govinda didn't answer. But in his mind, he thought that to serve you, I can commit thousands of offenses. But for my own sense gratification, I don't even want to dream of even a trace of an offense. So this is the service attitude. So all these subtleties of bhakti, all the anecdotes of how bhakti is performed, what are the different feelings of pure devotional service to Krishna, a summary is given. Even then, in Bhakti Rasa, you can't describe everything. It's not possible. But it gives us an idea of the ocean of the nectar of devotion that we can enter into by the mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, specifically in the modern age. Srila Prabhupada has brought us the nectar of devotion, not only the book, The Nectar of Devotion, but actually in practice also, The Nectar of Devotion. How? By, in pure devotional service, chanting the names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
We can be free automatically from all material distress. We can be situated in all auspiciousness. We can consider liberation, which is so much valued by highly advanced transcendentalists. We will consider that as insignificant. And even though pure devotional service is very rarely achieved, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can achieve that and go on to the highest stages of being situated in the complete bliss, ecstasy of pure devotional service, which is so attractive that even Krishna himself is attracted by it. So let us, time to time, read this book. We should all read Srila Prabhupada's books as much as possible, as often as possible, and in this way understand what is bhakti, act in bhakti, and become purified. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this?
Marsha, I have a question.
Yeah, okay, please ask it. I will try to explain.
In the shloka, anarpita charam iti, it's described, you're mentioning anatojvala rasa.
Mm.
And I've heard some debate, some Vaishnavas say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give the ecstasy and the service of the Manjaris. And when you study the writings of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, etc., you hear shlokas like Nikunja Yunorati Kili Siddhai. And so they use this as their pramana. Now, is that the correct understanding of our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, or is it that he's come to give other rasas as well?
Well, both are true, because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's specifically stated that he came to give bhakti in four rasas. But, so, we find even among his followers, there are devotees of Lord Ram also. And there are different rasas, but specifically that rasa which was unknown, not understood, not enterable into the, as you say, the gopi rasa. That is, so yes, it's true, he came to give all rasas, but particularly the Vraja bhakti rasa, gopi rasa. That's stated in very famous song of, famous among Bengali Vaishnavas, description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jodi gorna hoito tobe ki hoito kemane dharitam de. Radhar mahima prema rasa shima jagate janato ke. Basu Ghosh is the author of this song. He says that if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not come, how could we have sustained our lives? The glories of Srimati Radharani, which are the prema rasa sima, the ultimate limit of pure love of God, who could have told this to the world? And the next verse goes, Madhura Brinda Bipina Madhuri Prabesha Chaturisha Baraja Jubote Bhavera Bhakati Shakati Hoito Ka. The next verse is that the sweet groves of Vrindavan, Madhura Brinda Bipina Madhuri, the sweetness of the groves of Vrindavan, to enter into that is the essence. And Baraja Jubati, the young girls of Vrindavan, their bhava bhakti, their feelings in pure devotional service. Shakati hoitoka. Who could have understood this without the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So that is there. That concentration is there. Within the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, those who are followers of Nityananda Prabhu, they are concentrated on prayoras or sakyaras, so the mood of friendship, in like the cowherd boys. Well, but in the modern age, there isn't much else actually in the sampradayas as they've come down. It's mostly that emphasis is toward that. And Rupa Goswami himself, as well as writing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in which all the five, the Shantarati, Dasyarati, Sakyarati, Vatsalyarati, Madhur or Shringarati, they're all described, the five kinds of rati or attachments to Krishna in different relationships. But he wrote one other whole big book, Ujjvala Nilamani, to describe specifically the Shringaras, or the specifically the loving relationships of the lovers toward Krishna and interaction. So it's true that he came to give all forms of bhakti. But there was this Unatajvala Rasas that specifically points toward the love of the gopis for Krishna. These are all very high topics, no doubt. That we can't pole vault into the rasa dance or barge our way in, nor by simply discussing it do we become eligible for these topics. But it is the It is the ultimate gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees. That again is not to be understood in a mundane way. If one can become a blade, Uddhava thought, if I can become a blade of grass in Vrindavan, I'll be very fortunate. So who can say they're as exalted as, I'm as good as, or I'm better than Uddhava, I'm going to do better than Uddhava, I'm going to outdo him. Who can say that? Anyway, pure devotional service begins with giving up all material desires. You know, some very basic things come first. We should always remember that before we attempt our pole vaults into the rasa dance, gate crashing. Here we are. It's not possible. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You explained bhakti, but in bhakti, by practicing devotional life, kleshani, shubdha, problems don't bother you. Problems don't go away, but they don't bother you, and you advance. But then why do devotees fall away?
Why do devotees fall away? Ask them. It's up to you. You don't, no one forces you to stop chanting Hare Krishna.
So if they're experiencing ecstasy, why still?
Well, if they're experiencing ecstasy, why do they fall down? Well, to experience ecstasy, one has to do bhakti. One has to do bhakti according to the directions in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Sometimes people think, devotees think, well, you see, so many devotees, they took it up and they went away again. And then they have doubt in the process of bhakti. They think bhakti doesn't work. But actually, their going away demonstrates that the process of bhakti as given by Rupa Goswami does work. Because those who don't follow it properly, they fall away. And those who do follow it properly, they don't fall away. That's why we have all these guidelines given in the books. If we follow, then we're safe. Of course, there's no guarantee. Maya is very strong. But if we seriously take to devotional service, then Krishna will look after us and shelter us. And even if one who has seriously practiced bhakti goes away, then Krishna won't forget him. And nor is it possible for him to fully forget Krishna. So it's up to you. You can doubt the process of bhakti, or by seeing others go away, you can self become more firm that, let me pray for the mercy that I don't make the same mistake. May Krishna, but then I should take more seriously to the process of bhakti. Be sheltered. But ultimately it depends on the mercy of Hari Guru and Vaishnava. There's no formula by which you can be saved. You may think, I'll hide away and not see any materialists, and I'll only eat once a day very simple food, and I'll chant lots of rounds. No guarantee you're going to be saved. Or you may think, well, I'll go out and preach a lot and I'll get the mercy. And there's no guarantee. The material world is a very dangerous place. We have to simply beg for the mercy of Hari Guru and Vaishnava, follow the process to the best of our ability, and pray for the mercy. No one should think, I am safe. Even Srila Prabhupada himself said, every night I pray to Krishna to protect me from Maya. One thing, if you put your hand on your mouth, it becomes contaminated, and then everything else you touch becomes contaminated. I told the story this morning, I've told it many times, how Prabhupada saw a little boy, maybe 1.5 years old, with his hand on his mouth. He told the mother, he stopped the whole fire sacrifice. Told the mother, take this child out, wash his hand, and teach him not to put his hand on his mouth. So your mother should have taught you that, son. How old are you? 34. So 33 years ago or so, your mother should have taught you that. But they don't teach these things anymore, because they teach how to get a college degree, but they don't teach how to be a human being. Sorry, I don't mean to insult your mother, but it's the whole Indian culture has run down. People don't know even basic things. So I don't want to treat you like a child, but the thing is, if you put your hand on your mouth, the next thing you're going to touch your bead bag, you're going to touch the nectar, you're going to touch everything else and contaminate everything else. So actually, if one puts his hand on his mouth, he should wash it. It's something we should all learn. Just like we give Brahmin initiation, only Brahmin initiates are supposed to worship the deity. But that doesn't mean that just you've been in the movement 6 months, you've been initiated, first initiated 6 months, and therefore you should know all these points of cleanliness, all these different things. Don't step over anything. All these different things. That's why Brahmins only traditionally worship the deities in the temple. Because they had this training. You have to touch the form of the Lord, and you know, you've just been picking your nose and chewing your fingernails, and then you're going to touch the form of the Lord. And it becomes offensive. So, yeah. Don't mind if it's embarrassing, but hopefully it can be instructive to all of us. You see now you're putting hands on your beads, putting the beads on the floor. How many things do we have to say? Yeah, another question is there.
How do one know that
one of these, how do?
Advancing in bhakti.
How do you know if you're advancing in bhakti? Again, by the symptom. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo virakti ranyatra. If we're becoming attached to hearing about, chanting about, and serving Hari Guru and Vaishnava, and simultaneously becoming detached from hearing, chanting about, remembering, and being involved in mundane activities, that is the test. Simple.
By practicing devotional service, two of many obstacles are laziness and desire for sense gratification. So, can you...
It's another how-to. How to not be lazy, just don't be lazy. Get up and do something. It's up to you. What do you want someone to come and poke you with a stick all the time? Ultimately, you have to decide. What do you want? You want to serve Krishna or you want to be a lazy bum and go to hell? It's up to you. What do you want? Bhakti is not for lazy people. Sadhana means one should always be active, always engaged. So, it's up to you. You have to make your decision. What was the other one? Laziness and?
Desire for sense gratification,
well, the same thing. You remain engaged in Krishna's service, and then where's the time even to think of sense gratification? Always be busy in Krishna's service. There's so many things to do. We can change our desires. Instead of desiring to enjoy this world, we can think how to spread Krishna consciousness. There are so many things to enjoy in Detroit. You can go to the lakes and swim in them and go on boats on them and take your girlfriend down to them, and there's so many things you can do. But instead you might think, we can go to the Niagara Falls and do kirtan there so that all the tourists can be benefited. We can put a book table and make plans. How many people are there in Detroit? How many is it? 3 million?
Three million
is a good guess. Give myself a pat on the back for that one. So, and now, here's a guess. How many homes are Prabhupada's books in? Not even 2.5 million, probably. It's been a long time since there was any serious book distribution here. So how about that? How about making a desire to fill up Detroit with Prabhupada's books? That's a big... If you can do that, then that'll be a great service. And then you won't have time to think about material desires. You just have to think how to... All these people, they don't know about Krishna. We're living in this city. We have this knowledge. We have Prabhupada's orders. We have Prabhupada's mission. What are we doing? We should fulfill Prabhupada's mission. Book distribution is the main preaching. So there's this. How to get free from material desires? Here's something practical. Go on book distribution. Distribute Prabhupada's books. And even if you are battered by the material energy, Prabhupada will be pleased. He will help you. He will protect you. That we've seen again and again and again. That those who take the trouble to distribute Prabhupada's books, even if they are afflicted by the material energy, Prabhupada is so pleased, he protects them, he helps them. How about that? How about making Detroit capital of book distribution? Then everything else will come up. Then everything else will come up. The temple will come up. And you'll have problems. I'm not saying you won't have problems in the temple, but there'll be different kinds of problems. Now this is my book distribution area. Now I want to go there. And fighting amongst each other. That guy, I can't stand him. He keeps on going in my area. He doesn't have permission. This kind of fighting is better than over. I don't know what other. I don't know what devotees fight over. It's, but then the kirtans will be blissful. Kirtan bliss doesn't come from expert mridanga playing. Of course, it's nice to play mridanga. I'm not saying it's bad to play mridanga expertly, but the real bliss comes from the surrender and the dedication in the Sankirtan movement. You don't know anything about that, probably. Try it out. There's a whole new dimension of devotional service open to those who go out to distribute books. Here's Madhav Gopinath Das Adhikari from Hyderabad via Seattle. So he was writing how he's distributing books in the rain at a fair in Seattle. And everyone's having an umbrella, so he'd have to hold their umbrella and they're eating hamburgers and cigarettes, and he'd have to hold that while they're looking for their money. He never touched these things in his life. But he's transcended the platform of being a pure Brahmana to be the platform of pure Vaishnava, that to give them the mercy of Prabhupada's books, he'll touch these horrible things, which otherwise even in his dream he'd never touch. Because he's understood. We have to distribute Prabhupada's books. What? The people need this. So,